The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition, where we're going to do our best to answer your questions that mostly sent in via our website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Also, we get a few through the, we have a Social Security blog site called, here's a really long website for you, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So it's all just kind of run together as one gigantic word, but helpwithmysocialsecurity.com has posts that are specifically Social Security related. Here on the Retirement and IRA Show, we do deal with Social Security quite a lot because it's certainly an element of almost everyone's retirement plan. So we get questions from both sides, from the podcast and from that blog site that we have. Today, my name's Chris. I'm running solo. Actually, Jim is out. He picked a glorious week to go try to harvest an elk here in beautiful Colorado. This week where he's hunting, I'm pretty sure it's about 5 below zero and snowing aggressively. So I'm sure we'll hear next week how that works out. I haven't, in the past several years, he typically is not out hunting in such weather, so I'm sure we're going to get all the gory details about how much fun that was. But that's a little cold for me. He's more dedicated than I am, so we wish him luck. But on today's show, since we have our biggest backlog of questions in our pile of questions in the queue, happen to be Social Security questions. So I figured since I can answer those pretty efficiently and without a lot of input from Jim, I will try to put a big dent in this pile of Social Security questions we have. So today's Q&A show will be mostly focused on Social Security questions, if not completely Social Security questions. So we'll dive right into it, since it's really hard to banter with yourself. So I'm going to dive into the first one. And this first question actually comes from a listener here in Colorado. And he writes, I looked through and listened to a lot of your shows concerning Social Security benefits, but didn't find the answer to my question. I was on disability for about 10 years before my full retirement age. At my full retirement age, 66, my disability benefit automatically was changed to a retirement benefit. There was no change in the amount of the benefit. My wife will be reaching full retirement age, also 66, this year. Our strategy is to file for restricted spousal benefits for my wife and allow her retirement benefits to grow, and at age 70, file for her own benefits. Should her benefit amount be approximately 50% of my benefits at age 66 when they changed my benefits from disability to retirement benefits? Also, to make sure she's getting the full restricted spousal benefits and not a reduced amount, should she wait until at least the day she turns 66 before she applies for the spousal benefits? So, a few things going on here. First, let me remind people if they're not sure of this or have forgotten this or maybe didn't know this, that if you are collecting Social Security disability benefits, upon reaching your full retirement age, they automatically discontinue those benefits and turn on your retirement benefit. The thought process there is they no longer need to be paying you disability, which assumes you cannot work because of this disability. You don't need that payment anymore because now you're retired and you can collect a retirement benefit. And that retirement benefit, just like they said, is generally the same as what the disability payment was before you switched over to the retirement benefit. So it's for you, the recipient of these benefits, things don't really change very much. It's more an accounting issue of what pot those or what bucket those monies are coming out of in order to pay you. They're no longer coming out of the disability bucket, but rather the retirement benefit bucket. So that's normal. That he mentioned that's not really part of his question. But then he went on to say his wife, who has her own benefit, is thinking of filing a restricted application for benefits. Now, those of you out there who have been listening for a while might have heard that this has gone away. It has gone away for everyone born after January 1st of 1954. As long as you were born before January 2nd, so January 1st or before of 1954, you can still proceed with this strategy. And what this allows you to do, when you're able to file a restricted application, you can go into Social Security, and in this case, she's eligible for both a spousal benefit on his record and also her own retirement benefit. Through the restricted application, she can tell Social Security to just turn on the spousal benefit alone, leaving her own benefit untouched, allowing it to grow in the background unclaimed to age 70 while she's collecting a spousal benefit. He's right that that spousal benefit will be 50% of what his benefit was when he turned 66, so he does have that correct. And she can still pursue this strategy. She was born, it's getting close, she's part of the last year or two of those folks who were grandfathered in. Again, you have to be born before January 2nd of 1954 to do this. And then he's really concerned about, yes, it sounds like a viable strategy. What I would recommend you do if you have this strategy available to you. And then goes on to ask, wait till after the first day she's 66. No, not necessarily. They recommend that when you're filing for benefits that you actually start the paperwork and file 2 to 3 months before you want to receive benefits. So you'll just have to, you'll make the effective date the month she turns 66. So even though you might go in a month or two or three even before that, they put an effective date on the application, and you just, as long as that's the month that she turns 66, all will be fine. They won't reduce it anymore. He is right that if she were to turn it on before that, first of all, they won't let her file a restricted application before age 66, before her full retirement age. Prior to that, she would be forced to start her own benefit. So if they start talking in those terms, you know something has gone wrong and they're not filling it out correctly. But word on the street is actually that you can file for a restricted application right through the online portal. There was at the SSA.gov website, if you go to your account on there, they actually do have the restricted application as a choice in the filing process there, at least from what I've heard. I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but someone that I trust relayed that to me. So you can do that online even without going in. For those of you who go in, just make very clear what your intent is. If they tell you you can't do it anymore, ask to speak to a supervisor or a technical expert, because everything you've told me leads me to believe that you absolutely can do that. So hopefully that helped you out here from Colorado. The second question comes in from Oklahoma, so not too far away from Colorado. And this question goes on to say, my mother will be turning 65 this year and is trying to figure out how to maximize her Social Security benefit. She did not work the 40 quarters required to have a personal benefit. Let me pause there. You still do have to earn 40 credits, 40 quarters of coverage is what it's referred to. And so at minimum, it takes 10 years of work to earn this because you can earn a maximum of 4 credits per year. And she did not get that. So she's not eligible to receive a retirement benefit of her own. So going on with the question. However, my father worked and paid in while he worked prior to passing at age 56. She's planning on using survivor benefits from my deceased father. When we went to visit the Social Security office, we were told that she will receive her maximum benefit when she turns 66, since survivor benefits do not grow if you wait until 70 to start collecting, as they do with a personal benefit. I just wanted to make sure that we received correct information and will not miss out on a larger benefit check by turning on Social Security after age 66. In this case, you did receive correct information. The survivor benefit, and this, some people kind of mix this up. So the survivor benefit can be increased by delayed retirement credits, but only by the person who earned the benefit delaying. So this would have been your father, her husband, prior to death. In this case, he died so early he didn't get any delayed retirement credits. But if he were to have had lived longer and delayed claiming, his benefit would increase, and that benefit is retained for the survivor benefit. So some people, when they hear, oh, delayed retirement credits don't apply to survivor benefits, they don't apply once you're receiving it as a survivor benefit, but the establishment of the benefit by the original number holder, in this case the husband, does get increased by delayed retirement credits if he were to have delayed. So just to be clear here, in this case they did get good information because she, the recipient of the survivor benefit in this case, cannot increase it any more than what it is at her full retirement age. If she claims before her full retirement age, they will reduce it, so it is possible to make it smaller, but there's nothing she can do through delaying to make it larger than it is his full benefit that she is eligible to receive when she gets to the age of 66, which is her full retirement age. So it is true, no benefit for delaying for her to 70. So she'd want to turn on that benefit. There's really no reason to coordinate with any other benefits. If she had her own, my opinion might be different. There might be a different strategy here about claiming survivor versus her own benefit, but she has no retirement benefit of her own in this particular case. So once she turns 66, a little bit before that, you'll want to file, like I mentioned before, so that you can start receiving it as soon as possible after age 66. But there's no benefit to her delaying in this particular case. Okay. Next one. I told you we get through a bunch of these. It's amazing when Jim isn't interrupting how much we can talk about here. Don't tell him I said that, though. Next question comes in from Georgia. So this question starts, in one of your posts, you write, quote, you are exposed to the earnings test that will reduce your benefit if you earn more than a specific amount each year before your full retirement age. Once you reach full retirement age, you can earn as much as you want without it affecting your benefit, although it may cause a taxation issue, end quote. Then he goes on to say, when you say, quote, earn, you are referring to regular income, not retirement income, question mark. Often in articles, they use, quote, income, but do not define which, quote, income they mean. The IRS has differing categories of, quote, income. So in this case, the earnings test. So as a reminder, for those maybe not familiar, the earnings test applies when you are receiving Social Security benefits prior to your full retirement age. They will allow you to collect retirement benefits or survivor benefits prior to your full retirement age, but will reduce that benefit in the case that you are working and earning money. So it's specifically, it's not, quote, income. It's literally wages from work is what they count here. So it's got to be wages from work that you're doing, either as an employee or being self-employed. But it's wages from work, no other income, not interest expense, not retirement income, so distributions from retirement accounts, pensions. None of that has anything to do with it. It is all about earned income from work. So in 2019, which is when I'm recording this, the earnings limit for most years prior to your full retirement age is $17,640 a year, which means you can earn up to that amount with no effect on your Social Security benefit. If you exceed that amount in earned income from work, so wages from work, you are going to have your Social Security benefit reduced $1 for every $2 over that amount. So that's the typical limit that we're talking about. If you have, in the year you reach your full retirement age, the limit is pushed way up. It's almost $47,000. And if you exceed that, then your Social Security is reduced $1 for every $3 above that limit. But most people are concerned about that $17,640. That they're dealing with. It's only in that very final year that you actually reach your full retirement age. Just in the months prior to your full retirement age month, this matters, because in your full retirement age month, immediately the earnings test goes away. So in this case, it is wages from work, which is the key here. That's the way I always recommend people think of it when they're dealing with the earnings test itself. Another thing that comes up related to this, I get this question all the time: what if I get paid for work I did before, but they paid me later on? Maybe it was deferred compensation of some kind, or it was commissions that I earned selling things in the past, and now they've, you know, but they pay it in 3 months in arrears or something like that. That those don't count actually in the year, in the month that you receive them. They are counted in the month that you earned them. So that does, if you have some pay that was paid to you, maybe sometimes people will retire and they'll get vacation pay, or sick leave gets paid to them as a lump sum, or old, you know, commissions from sales from months before, things like that will slowly trickle in after their retirement date, and they're worried it would affect their Social Security because of the earnings test. Those do not. Those it has to be earnings in the months that you're actually receiving the Social Security benefit, and it's wages from work that's the key here. Okay. Question number four. Let's see here. This one's coming from North Carolina. So this question starts: I started taking Social Security benefits on my own record at age 63. My husband started taking benefits just before his 63rd birthday. I understand that any survivor benefit I would receive will be reduced because he started taking benefits early. My question is, will my survivor benefit be further reduced because I started drawing on my own record at age 63? I am now 70. My husband's 80. His health is very poor, and this is a situation I may face soon. Okay, so it is true that when you receive a survivor benefit, there is the general rule with survivor benefits is the survivor, and she, this is the wife asking the question, so it's from the perspective of her situation. When she's going to receive a survivor benefit, she will receive whatever benefit he was collecting or could potentially have been collecting the day before he passed away. So if this is, say, if he hasn't claimed yet, say this is, you know, they're 70 and 80 now, so this is would be looking back in time. Imagine that they're 67 years old, that he's 67 years old and passes away and he hadn't claimed yet. The survivor benefit would be whatever benefit he could have claimed or he would have been receiving if he'd claimed the day before he passed away. Well, in this instance, he's already claimed, so he's receiving a benefit. So the survivor benefit is what he's receiving right before he passes away. And that benefit was limited or reduced because he filed at 63 before his full retirement age. That reduction persists. That will continue on to the survivor. So we always recommend people, when they're thinking of claiming at a certain point, don't consider just the benefit while you're alive. Consider the impact on the benefit for your surviving spouse, especially when, in this case, the wife is 10 years younger. So, you know, females typically have a longer life expectancy, and then add on to that that she's 10 years younger. She might live for a very long time receiving just the survivor benefit alone. So restricting it or reducing it by filing early might be quite painful in the long run. So we always encourage people to consider that before they decide to file at a particular point in time. Second thing, it does not get further reduced because she claimed her own benefit before her full retirement age. Where it might have gotten reduced is, let's roll back time to when he was 67 and she was 57. Or let's make it 70 and 60. That makes the years a little bit easier to describe. Let's pretend instead of him passing away at 80, that he passed away at 70 when she was 60 years old. Well, the fact that she was going to claim her own benefit early has nothing to do with the survivor benefit. However, if she were to have claimed the survivor benefit before her full retirement age, it would be further reduced below what he was collecting. The good news is she's well past her full retirement age. She's now 70. So there's the fact that she filed for her own benefit early, that early filing does not get applied to the survivor benefit. Only his early filing status reduced it. Her early filing status didn't. Because technically she's not filing for a survivor benefit early. She's filing at or beyond her full retirement age. So bottom line is, whatever he's receiving now, assuming it's bigger than hers, which must be the case or she probably wouldn't be asking this question, but whatever he's receiving now, her benefit will disappear, will go away, and she will continue to receive his amount of benefit as a survivor benefit, not reduced because she filed early, so you don't have to worry about that. And yeah, that's how the survivor benefit itself is factored in. It is not reduced by a prior decision you may have made for your own benefit. The act of filing for a survivor benefit is on its own time clock, its own timeline, separate from the retirement benefit that you might also be eligible to receive. Okay, let's see here. Next one, Kansas. So we're going all over the place here. Kansas question. Regarding earnings test, can you please clarify the timing and mechanics? I can't determine if the earnings test uses previous year's income or current year's income. It seems like the earnings test would be based on current income, but then how would they know how much to withhold? Also, what is, quote, income? Is it AGI or taxable or something else? Well, let's tackle that second part because I've already answered it in an earlier question. What is income? It is wages from work, period, full stop. That is what it is, wages from work, no other entry on the, it's not the entries on your tax return, it's wages from work. Where are they going to get this information? Well, ultimately, they're going to receive it through the payroll filings from your employer. Or if you're self-employed, when you file your payroll information with the IRS and the Social Security Department. So they are eventually going to get it. It is applied real time in the current year. So when he asks, how are they going to know? Well, the other way they know how much is you tell them. So what happens is they take you at your word. When you go in and file for your benefit, they ask you, are you currently working? And if so, how much are you making? And if you tell them the truth, they will withhold the proper amount if you're exceeding the earnings test. That'll all be handled properly that way. But then every year, every quarter, actually, usually, they will receive payroll information from employees. So sometime after the fact, they'll figure out what you really were paid. And if you misled them, or you were wrong, or things turn out differently, and you actually made a lot more, they will address that later on. They'll send you a letter and say, by our calculations, we have overpaid you, so we are going to stop paying you until we've recovered the overage that we have paid you in the past. For that reason, I encourage people to be upfront with the Social Security Administration and tell them when you're earning money and subject to the earnings test. So when you're earning wages from work and you are before your full retirement age and collecting Social Security benefits. They will figure it out. They will find out. And it's a lot easier to put up with the regular recurring monthly reductions than to suddenly receive a letter a year or so later telling you, we discovered you made a lot more, so we're actually going to shut off your benefit completely for the next 2 or 3 months in order to recover what we owe you. That's what they do. So it's better for most people to have a reduction a little bit every month, so they have a little bit of pain, but they're still receiving a benefit regularly. If you underestimate or underreport your wages, and then they later on find out they were much higher, they're going to literally shut off your benefits for a certain period of time until they've recovered the overage. And if you're relying on those payments, that can be quite painful. So just to be aware of that, it's wages from work, and yes, it's in the current months. It's not, they don't take last year and apply it moving forward, anything like that. So it is strictly the current earnings, and they apply them on a month-to-month basis. If you're using the grace year election, where it's in the first year that you're retired, you can have them apply the earnings test on a monthly basis. If it's applying on an annual basis, they're going to look at it annually. But it's generally in your best interest to tell them the truth up front so they can make the estimated reductions so you don't get this sudden bad news of your benefit being shut off when they find out later you're earning a heck of a lot more. Okay, let's see. Let's do one more question here. Let's say, okay, this one's from California, so we'll go to the coast here. And it says, I'm going to retire next year at age 66. I was checking on my estimated benefits today on the Social Security website. The site says that the estimated benefit is based on the presumption that I will make the same salary as I did this year. Unfortunately, I'm going to be laid off and not make the same salary my last year before retirement. How is this going to affect my benefit? I am very concerned. Okay, so this probably maybe a little recap of how they calculate your benefit will help. The good news is I don't think you should be real concerned. And the reason for that is your Social Security benefit is based on 35 individual years of earnings. Your best 35. So they take your best 35 and not just the nominal or unadjusted dollars. They're not going to look at, say, earnings you had 30 years ago that might have been very small and consider them at face value. They are actually going to adjust them or index them for inflation and to make them kind of, they index everything so that they put it in the context of your age 60 dollars. They just picked age 60 as the reference point. So whatever year you were 60, they're going to adjust all wages prior to that level by applying wage inflation, which the good news is wage inflation is a little bit higher than cost of living inflation, so the CPI inflation, so it benefits you in that way. So anyway, they're going to index these all or inflate these all for age 60. And so in this last year, the most that this next year could do is affect one of those 35 years that they're going to consider in your earnings history. So whether it's big or small, half as big, it certainly might affect it. But for most people, it's not going to affect it more than maybe a few dozen dollars a month is typically what I've seen. I couldn't give you a figure without seeing your entire earnings record and knowing how your history of earnings has been compared to the year that you were planning on. It is true that when you look at your benefits statement from Social Security, your estimated benefit statement, if you read the fine print, they're assuming that you're going to continue to earn the average of what you've earned the past couple of years. You're going to continue to earn that right up until the point where you claim Social Security. So in their estimates, they're assuming that. Now, you said you're going to be laid off and you may not have that. But again, it's not going to drastically change the average of those 35 best years that you've got. Only one out of 35, so a little tiny piece, only about 3% of the total figure that they're using is going to be affected. It's either going to be zero, maybe, but my guess is you'd have another year that would take its place if it turned out to be zero and you're laid off earning nothing at all. Or if you had a year that it was just reduced, it may or may not, it's possible it'd have no effect. If it turns out to have an effect, I expect it to be rather small. There's a number of calculators. You could figure out exactly what it is. Social Security's website actually has a calculator where you can enter in your actual expected earnings amount, and it'll give you benefit estimates. It's not the most user-friendly thing to use. I've had a few people try to use it, and it's a little clunky. It's accurate, but it's not particularly easy to use. There's others out there, but what you're going to have to find is a calculator that allows you to actually enter every year of your earnings record, which you can get from your Social Security statement. Most people don't have a record of all the earnings they've had from birth, but you're supposed to enter all your earnings from the past. It will do the calculation, and you can enter in zero for this upcoming year to see how much effect that has on your Social Security benefit. So the last statement where he says, I'm very concerned, I don't think you should be. It might make zero difference. If it does make a difference, it's going to be rather small. So I wouldn't be particularly concerned there. Some people think the benefit is weighted, the calculation is weighted really heavily on more recent earnings. It's not at all. It treats those 35 years, each year, just as important as another year. They don't weight them more heavily or lighter simply because they're recent or not recent. It's just going to be one of the 35 that goes into the averaging that they do to come up with your average indexed monthly earnings. And then they put it through a secondary calculation to determine the benefit. But it all starts with that average indexed monthly earnings, which is the average of your best 35 years of earnings over your lifetime, not just your most recent 35, although a lot of people, their highest earning years are the most recent 35. But it doesn't have to be. They're going to look at your entire earnings record and figure it out from that. So that being said, boy, I cranked through quite a few of these. Got six of these out here, so that's a bit of a record. And when Jim's back next week, we'll tackle a bunch of non-Social Security questions. Those tend to be longer, a little more drawn out, So kind of benefit from a little more back-and-forth interaction with Jim and I. So I figured the Social Security questions would be the best thing to handle today while he's out. We do really appreciate you listening. If you'd like to reach out to us for more assistance, either on Social Security or any other aspect of your retirement planning, we are active, living, breathing, practicing retirement planning folks here in Northern Colorado. We help people all over the country, though, because we can interact with them through the internet, through screen sharing, through the telephone. And so we deal with a lot of people all over the country. As you can see from the questions that came in, they came from a wide variety of states. I think we have clients in practically every state in the union at this point. But if you'd like a little more information on what we do and what we might be able to help you with, reach out to us on the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. From there, you can reach out via email or phone and schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which is our free introductory meeting where we can chat a little bit about what your concerns are, what your situation is, relay what we do here and kind of our philosophy on retirement planning. And if it's a good fit, we can move forward. And if it's not, hopefully we can direct you to some resources that can help you out. But jimhelps.com is the best way to reach out to us. So thanks a lot, everybody, for hanging with us and listening. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.